Pentecost Sunday, a reading from the Holy Gospel according to John, chapter 15, verses 26 to 27, and chapter 16, verses 12 to 15. Jesus said to his disciples, "When the Advocate comes, whom I shall send to you from the Father, the Spirit of truth who issues from the Father, he will be my witness. And you too will be witnesses, because you have been with me from the outset. I still have many things to say to you, but they would be too much for you now. But when the Spirit of truth comes, he will lead you to the complete truth, since he will not be speaking as from himself, but will say only what he has learnt. And he will tell you of the things to come. He will glorify me, since all he tells you will be taken from what is mine. Everything the Father has is mine. That is why I said, all he tells you will be taken from what is mine."
It is Holy Thursday night, and Jesus is giving his last instructions to his beloved apostles in the room of the Last Supper shortly before leaving for Gethsemane and the beginning of his Passion. He says, "When the Comforter comes, the Spirit of truth, who proceeds from the Father, will bear witness of me. And you also will witness for me, because you have been with me since the beginning. I have not told you these things so extensively before this hour, because you were just like newborn babies. But the mother is now leaving you. I'm going away, and you must become accustomed to other food. I want you to know this. No one of you has asked me again, 'Where are you going?' Sadness is making you dumb. And yet my going away is also a good thing for you. Otherwise, the Comforter will not come. I will send him to you. And when he has come, through the wisdom, the words, the deeds, and the heroism that he will infuse into you, he will convince the world of its deicide sin and of justice with regard to my holiness. A clear cut will divide the world into reprobates, enemies of God, and believers. The latter will be more or less holy according to their will, but judgment will be passed on the prince of the world and his servants. I cannot tell you more because you are not yet able to understand. But he, the Paraclete, will give you the whole truth. He will not speak as from himself, but he will tell you everything he heard from the mind of God, and will announce the future to you. He will take what comes from me, that is, what is still of the Father, and he will tell you." Shortly before his ascension into heaven, Jesus says to his apostles, "Do you remember my words of the Last Supper? I promised you the Holy Spirit. Well, he is about to come to baptize you, not with water, as John did with you, preparing you for me, but with fire, to prepare you to serve the Lord as he wants you to do. So he will be here within a few days, and after his coming, your capabilities will increase immeasurably, and you will be able to understand the words of your King and do the deeds that he told you to do to spread his kingdom all over the earth."
The next passage from the first four verses of today's first reading describes the descent of the Holy Spirit upon the apostles and Mary. A reading from the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 2, verses 1 to 4. When Pentecost Day came round, the apostles had all met in one room, when suddenly they heard what sounded like a powerful wind from heaven. the noise of which filled the entire house in which they were sitting. And something appeared to them that seemed like tongues of fire. These separated and came to rest on the head of each of them. They were all filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak foreign languages as the Spirit gave them the gift of speech.
It is some days after Jesus' ascension into heaven, shortly after Matthias, the former shepherd who adored Jesus at his birth, has been elected as the 12th apostle. Maria Valtorta describes what she sees and hears. No voices or noises can be heard in the house of the Last Supper. There are only the presence and the voices of the 12 and of the Most Holy Virgin gathered in the supper room itself. The room looks wider because the furniture is placed differently. But they have left one couch seat, the only couch seat placed at right angles to the table, all for the Blessed Virgin, who is at the centre of the table in the place that Jesus occupied at the supper. Only the chandelier in the centre is lit, and only one flame is lit. The other small flames on the circle forming a corolla to the strange chandelier are out. The windows are closed with heavy metal bars placed across them, but a sunbeam penetrates boldly through a tiny hole, and like a long thin needle it descends on the floor, forming a round spot of sunshine. The Blessed Virgin, sitting all alone on her seat, has Peter and John at her sides on their seats. Peter is on her right, John on her left. Matthias, the new apostle, is between James of Alphaeus and Thaddeus. In front of her, Our Lady has a large, low chest of dark wood, which is closed. She is dressed in deep blue. Her hair is covered with a white veil, over which is placed the edge of her mantle. All the others are bareheaded. Mary is reading slowly in a loud voice, but as the light that arrives there is very faint, I think that rather than read, she is repeating by heart the words written on the scroll that she is holding. The others follow her in silence, meditating. Now and again they reply when it is appropriate. Mary's face is transfigured by an ecstatic smile. I wonder what she sees that is capable of inflaming her eyes like two clear stars and making her ivory cheeks blush as if a rosy flame reflected on her. She is really the mystic rose. The apostles bend forward, sitting a little sideways, to see her face while she smiles so gently and reads. And her voice sounds like the song of an angel. Peter is so deeply moved that two large tears fall from his eyes and stream down along wrinkles on both sides of his nose to get lost in the thicket of his grey beard. But John reflects the virginal smile and is inflamed like her with love, while he follows with his eyes what the Virgin is reading on the scroll. And when he hands her a new scroll, he looks and smiles at her. The reading is over. Mary's voice stops. The rustling of the parchments, rolled and unrolled, comes to an end. And Mary concentrates on secret prayer, joining her hands on her breast and leaning her head on the chest. And the apostles imitate her. A very loud and harmonious roar that resembles the wind and the harp, as well as human singing and the sound of a perfect organ, suddenly resounds in the silence of the morning. It comes near, more and more harmonious and loud, and it fills the earth with its vibrations. It propagates them and impresses them on the house, on the walls, and on the furniture. The flame of the chandelier, so far immobile in the peace of the closed room, flickers as if a wind were blowing. And the little chains of the chandelier tinkle, vibrating under the wave of the supernatural sound that strikes them. The apostles raise their heads, frightened. And as that most beautiful rumble, in which are all the loveliest notes that God gave the heavens and the earth, approaches them more and more, some stand up, ready to run away. Some crouch on the floor, covering their heads with their hands and mantles, or beat their breasts, asking God to forgive them. And some press against Mary, too frightened to keep the reserve they always have for the most pure mother. Only John is not frightened, because he sees the bright peace of joy that is accentuated on the face of Mary. She raises her head, smiling at a thing known to her alone, and then slides down on her knees, opening her arms. And the two blue wings of her mantle, also opened, stretch out on Peter and John, who have knelt down and imitated her. But all this, which took me some minutes to describe, has taken place in less than 1 minute. And then, the light, the fire, the Holy Spirit enters, with a last melodious loud noise, in the form of a very shining burning globe into the closed room, without any door or window being moved. And it remains hovering for a minute over Mary's head, about 3 palms above her head, which is now uncovered. Because Mary, upon seeing the fire paraclete, has raised her arms to invoke him, and has thrown her head back with a cry of joy and a smile of boundless love. After that moment in which all the fire of the Holy Spirit and all the love is collected in his spouse, the most holy globe splits into 13 very bright flames, of so bright a light that no earthly comparison can describe, and it descends to kiss the forehead of each apostle. But the flame that descends and kisses Mary is not a tongue of a straight flame, but it is a crown that embraces and encircles the virginal head like a wreath, crowning as queen the daughter, the mother, the spouse of God, the incorruptible virgin, the holy beautiful, the eternally loved, the eternal maiden. She whom nothing can humiliate, whom sorrow had aged, but who has revived in the joy of the resurrection, sharing with her son an accentuation of bodily beauty and freshness, of looks, of vitality, already having an advance of the beauty of her glorious body received into heaven to be the flower of paradise. The Holy Spirit makes his flames shine around the head of his beloved. Which words does he speak to her? Mystery. Her blessed face is transfigured with supernatural joy and smiles with the smiles of seraphim. Blissful tears shine like diamonds on the cheeks of the Blessed Virgin struck by the light of the Holy Spirit. The fire remains like this for some time. Then it vanishes. In memory of its descent, a fragrance remains that no earthly flower can exhale, the perfume of paradise. The apostles collect themselves, but Mary remains in her ecstasy. She folds her arms across her breast, closes her eyes, and lowers her head. Her conversation with God continues, insensible to everything. And no one dare disturb her. John, pointing at her, says, "She is the altar, and the glory of the Lord has rested on her glory." "Yes," says Peter, and with supernatural impulsiveness, "let us not upset her joy, but let us go and preach the Lord, and let his works and his words be known to all the people." "Let us go, let us go. The Spirit of God is burning in me," says James of Alphaeus. And another says, "And urging us to act, all of us, let us go and evangelize the people." They go out as if they were pushed or attracted by a wind or by a vigorous force. Azaria, Maria Valtorta's guardian angel, comments to Maria, whom he calls Little John. Have you ever meditated, O soul of mine, on the symbol of that tongue of fire which, you have seen it, rested upon each of the apostles' heads while it crowned the all-holy woman with a wreath? You are generally told that it was in the form of a flame to be perceptible to the apostles and to signify love and light. Yes, that too, but not that alone. The Paraclete, like the incarnate Word, broke and gave himself in a communion and in an outpouring and donation of his gifts of wisdom, intelligence, counsel, science, fortitude, piety, and fear of God. It was just as Jesus had given himself in body and blood, soul and divinity. This was notwithstanding that the blood of the Lamb had cleansed their souls, but had not destroyed their humanity, which had to struggle on its own and evolve towards perfect spirituality. And it remained heavy and dull even after the resurrection. After the Father had already created man for life, and the Son had created man for grace, the ineffable love wanted to complete and perfect these two creations and create the new apostolic man. This was to burn up the heaviest, the most poisonous dross remaining in the head, where the five senses are joined together at the service of material sensuality, where the organ is enclosed which presides over sensations and transmits them to the most remote organs, and where the agent of thought is. In the 12 destined to evangelize the world, there were to be no more ruins. And behold, the Spirit in his Pentecostal communion burnt and purified the seat of sense and thought, the heads of the apostolic men, while he crowned with love the head of the Virgin, his spouse, Mother of Grace, Mary, Queen of Apostles, and Queen of the Church on Earth.